It was weird buying a monitor that is completely, you know, it's just, it doesn't have all the fancy specs. It doesn't have AMD FreeSync or whatever, you know, newfangled monitor technology they have out there. It's I think it's only like 75 megahertz refresh rate. It's not made for gaming. It's made for looking at pictures in a correctly calibrated out of the box thing. Which is cool, but it was a moment where I did have to, like be an adult a little bit about a technology purchase, and I don't know how I feel about it, to be honest. Definitely all those flashy, like, gamer tag words were just, like, luring me away from this.
They should have. You should have just went with the coolest thing with all the RGBs and the 240 yeah. hertz that you're, your video card wouldn't even be able to run.
Can't even handle.
At a resolution too big, probably, for actually what you would need it for truly. Color correcting and all that stuff. You should have just went with it. A navigation nipples galore. You could have had a great monitor. Instead, it just sounds like like the Yugo or something, a monitor. It's just functional.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is fancy, but for the art production yeah. side of the digital space, and not necessarily the gaming side. But now I have like these two monitors. Both are ASUS. Both are next yeah. to each other. Yeah. Both one is got like it's a gamer monitor, so it's got the high refresh rate. It's got the AMD FreeSync. It's got the like. Weird, stupid tech lines in the back that make it yeah. look like it's a cyborg or something.
Yeah, it's going to be like it's got knurling, I bet. Like, really.
It's got greevils all over the place.
Giant flaming phoenix eye or pegasus eye or whatever it is. Yeah, yeah, of course. Of course.
Right. Republic of Gamers. That's right.
Let's go. You know we gotta keep it hype all day and night like this. Showing love when we can. Shout out to the super fans, You don't really wanna miss Pop Soccer, stay lit. So if you ready, we ride and take it back to the 90s. From movies to the video games, just a couple of nerds keep it so entertaining. Hey, Pop Soccer.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Pop Saga. Today, we're gearing up to dissect the latest thrill ride that is X-Men 97 Revival as we talk about the most recent episodes. That's right, John, that's me, has X-Men 97 on the brain, and I need to talk about it with somebody. That someone, well, it's our very own pop culture aficionado, Forrest. So grab your mutant powers and beverage of choice. Because it's time to embark on another adventure through the worlds of mutant rights here on Pop Saga. I didn't even have to keep it short. I gotta talk about the 97. I just gotta talk about it.
Wow, I actually loved that intro for the sake of comparison. So, John, a little behind the scenes for the folks out there. I thought for some reason I was doing the intro to this episode, so I wrote out a whole one.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little different than what we usually do. Would you like to hear my intro after we heard your amazing intro?
Totes, because I'm sure yours is way better than mine.
No, I was feeling a little weird. So your intro is extremely concise, and it tells people exactly what they need to know. I like it. I like it better than what I was going to do. And in fact, now with hindsight, I'm so glad that I didn't do my intro. But now, just for S's and G's... Let's hear this intro.
yep.
Katy Perry once opined in her 2010 feel-good anthem, Firework. Baby, you're a firework. Come on, let your colors burst. Make them go, oh, oh, oh. You're going to leave them all in ah, ah, ah. And while Miss Perry could not have known the quality or spectacle of the Disney Plus cartoon series X-Men 97 when she penned those timeless lyrics all those years ago, it might as well serve as a rallying cry for the triumphant continuation of Marvel's premier Saturday morning cartoon. Join us in this episode as we check back with a new series and see if we're still in ah. I'm Forrest, and I'm joined as always by John. John, if you were a firework, what sort of firework would you be?
A Roman candle.
Ooh, that's a good answer, though. Yeah, so there you go.
I don't know. I mean, that's pretty good. It's like you thought about it. Mine is just like, just the facts. I really dragnet it, this one. Just the, or Columbo, depending on who you want to talk to. Yeah. Just the facts with this one. Yeah.
No, I like it. It was succinct. It was good. Mine was, it's a weird day. I'm in a weird mood. And so we're going to have some weird energy on today's podcast. You remember this voice? Haven't pulled this one out in a while. Anyway, I'll go back to my room in the back of your Hyundai Daily City. That one's a deep cut for the fans.
It's super deep cut. I think it's in double digi territory. That's how long the Hyundai Daily City's been around.
God, I love that bit. I could go back to that version of Forrest who was so full of life, coming up with these bits, coming up with these characters.
Gleam in your eye.
Oh,
hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I don't know. I mean, like, because we have so many. We could be doing a Saturday morning cartoon with the rich world building we have on this show. We have so many fun characters. We have the entire cast of Night Stab.
Yep.
We have the your roommate in the back of the Hyundai Daily City, of course. The Spoiler Witch, of course. The Spoiler Witch, basically the third host on this podcast.
That's right. Our like unofficial producer, really.
Really, yeah. Giving us the thumbs up, thumbs down from under the bed, where the Spoiler Witch does live.
Dracula.
Don't forget Dracula. He's always flipping in here and
fluttering around and doing that stuff. And then
Terminator. Don't forget Baby Terminator.
Baby Terminator. Yes. Yes. That's right. Baby Terminator. Geez. We like literally a veritable cornucopia. Stallone, whenever he'd come by and visit, that was always great.
It's always a treat to have megastar Sly Stallone on the podcast.
Yeah, whenever he shows up, it's that. We had Internet Sweetheart Jesse Thorne do a bumper for us.
That's right. Yeah, real person.
A real person.
Real person that people know.
Yeah. Like, I'd really like the Pop Suck Saturday morning cartoon. That thing'd be wild.
Yeah, so what we're saying basically is one of you fans out there, get on it. Let's get a wiki going. We have enough content. We can go back. And that way, John, this is a little stroke of genius on my part, I think.
Yeah,
that way, we can reference the wiki. We won't have to, whatever we're thinking. Did we do this before? Which is something that very much happened recently on the behind the scenes on this very show. To say it, help us out.
It's true.
Let's get a back catalog going.
That would be great. I would love to have some level of documentation that I did not need to maintain that would let me know like what happened. Like,
yeah,
that would be absolutely. that would be great. That'd be great. Yeah, anyone out there, look, if you want to work on a wiki, I will give you like $10 to do it.
Yeah, and that's a steal.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's a promise from us to you. You can buy yourself a single stick of gum in today's shrinkflation world.
Let's not go too crazy.
Okay, yeah, not enough. The other day, I went to Taco Bell, and I spent almost $30.
Yep, yeah, it happened. It fucking happened. Before, you used to be able to go to Taco Bell, $12, get you the whole menu.
Yeah,
now,
not anymore.
You want like a Doritos Los Tacos and a Crunchwrap, $37.50 and a down payment for a house.
Yep. Yeah. They made me sign they made me do a credit report. It was a hard hit to my credit before I could even sell me a taco. They're like, we need to know that you could afford this taco.
Yeah, no, I've heard people do that. I'm sorry you had to go through it. I had to donate plasma for me to get like a bean burrito.
I heard about that. Yeah. Plasma for a burrito.
That hurt.
Promotion.
But it was worth it. I mean, I passed out a couple times because the burrito definitely did not escape shrinkflation as well. Like, the tortilla was more like a tour napkin. Like, it was about the size of one of those little party square napkins. It was not filling.
But, no, I feel like they fill those burritos these days with enough like slack, with enough empty space in there where that could that burrito might as well be a windsock.
Oh yeah, totally. Who's your team? I don't know. Boris Yeltsin? You can't tell. It just looks like a splotch. I don't know what that is.
Oh, sweet mercy. What fun we have with our expensive Taco Bell orders. I have to say though, here's a little tip for y'all out there, and you may not know this exists, but most Taco Bells, there is a little bit of an a la carte menu option that they don't put in any of the combos, and that is a spicy potato burrito. Not a burrito, taco. So sorry, soft taco. Spicy potato soft taco. And I have to say, it's a fun little treat.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's got like these little potato nuggets, and it's got a nice little sauce, a little lettuce, and a little shell. I really like it. And it's something that I just saw on the menu one day, and I was like, wait, what? I tried it. It's actually pretty good.
And how much is your potato taco compared to just a regular ground gym mat?
I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Oh, you know what I did try, though? I tried their new chicken cantina offerings.
The hell is chicken cantina offerings? Am I missing out on new Taco Bell tech?
I don't know. I was surprised to see, but they have this thing called like the chicken grilled cheese taco, and it has like cheese on the outside of the shell, and it's kind of seared in there. Yeah, it's not for you. It's not for you because it also is like inside is a lot of cheese and chicken, and it's kind of a smash down. It's like a little bit like a good taco you would get somewhere from like a food truck, but the bad version of it. Anyway, and you dip it in like a creamy sauce. I thought it was quite good. I'm just shocked they don't do it with beef. I'm not sure why it's chicken only. Maybe that's just they're trying to.
Yeah, they even look like they have a new sauce packet.
Yeah,
avocado the green verdes. Avocado.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh wow. You know where I don't see it? Wow. No potatoes. No potato taco anywhere.
Yeah, it's a weird little. It's not a secret menu thing because it is on the menu. But it is, I don't know. It's a good little thing. It's a good. Give it a try.
Yeah. Okay. So for the folks at home, you can get a spicy potato soft taco for $1.19.
Yeah, that's right. Only 240 calories. It is $1.19, almost on the dollar menu. You can make it supreme. You can make it fresco.
Yeah, and in comparison, $1.79 for a crunchy taco. So. If you're into potatoes like that.
Oh, wait, you can add seasoned beef. I might try to do a custom order next time.
Yeah, but try to see if you could do it with the beef, then throw the potatoes, see if the potatoes are cheaper.
You mean though? Like if I was like, substitute beef, and they're like, don't you want a beef soft taco? And I'm like, no.
I want my spicy potato soft taco. Just substitute the potatoes with seasoned beef. You understand?
You know, but here was an unwelcome surprise at the Taco Bell, is that the quesarito is gone.
Oh, they just straight got rid of it.
It's gone. And I looked it up, apparently as of the end of last year, no more quesarito. Guess what? I've never tried a quesarito. I missed my chance.
See, that's why you need to get on it. No more going to Taco Time or whatever you're doing, cheating on Taco Bell. When you see something new is at Taco Bell, you need to jump on it because you never know if you're going to miss out.
I do now. And I'll tell you, I was there buying the Mexican pizzas all up until they supposedly sent those away, and they brought those back. I don't want to say I'm responsible for that, but I'm not responsible for it, okay?
Fair. I think you probably are responsible. Good for you. Glad you brought that back.
I'm seeing a spike.
They're just one spike. Particular area of the Pacific Northwest.
Right. The POW loves their Mexican pizzas. Bring them back. We got to compete with that nefarious Taco Time.
We need to bring them back nationwide. And then we'll bring out our dragon fruit freeze, which is, that's what apparently they have at Taco Bell too. Now okay. I just want Taco Bell. Guess what? Tanya, we're getting Taco Bell tomorrow. Okay. Anyway, problem solved. I have taken out a subprime loan to to be able to buy us Taco Bell for tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll hard hit on your credit. You're good to go. You're going to get two tacos. You'll be indebted for life. It'll be great.
So
it's going to be good.
The worst part is I'm going to order one of these Cantina chicken things, and they're going to leave my avocado verde salsa packet.
They better not. That thing is a honker, too. It's like the size of two regular sauce packets.
Well, that's why I want it. I mean, they're charging 20 cents for it. I want my packet.
Of course.
I mean, I don't know how often you order food from out, but, you know, whenever we do it and you get something that comes with a sauce, it's like a 30% chance you're going to get that sauce.
Oh, and, yeah. You mean like from a delivery app?
Yeah, any one of them.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you're just like, ooh, I hope I get my barbecue sauce. And you come in and you'd be like, you get like soggy napkins. You're like, sorry. You just go like, oh, okay. I mean, I get it. I could have gone out there and got it. But like.
Yeah, that's why I do all of my food picking up in person. And I'm always like, look at me. I am the sauce boy now. Give me the sauces.
Well, that's been your nickname as long as I've known you.
Yeah, that makes sense. For different reasons before, but now it's definitely because I like making sure that I get all sauces that are owed to me.
That's right. Good on you.
Thank you. You know, I went to a buffet. I won't name it because I don't want to defame this place, but it was off. No, it wasn't. I don't think it's a chain, and for good because it was terrible. It was awful. Maybe I just haven't been to a buffet in very long. But this one sucked. I wasn't so sure I was going to get food poisoning more in my life. Luckily, I didn't. Thank goodness I dodged that bullet. But I'll just give you an example. We were just talking about sauces. I went there. It was a Chinese food buffet, but they had a bunch of different cuisines represented. The desserts were okay. But they had a bunch of really cold fries on the fried food aisle. So I picked up some fries because I had just gotten a beer and I wanted to have French fries and beer, too. Just one of my favorite combos. And I got their ketchup from this little, you know, squeeze pump thing. If you've been to a fast food place, you know what I'm talking about. It has the big lever on top. Anyway, I tasted some of this ketchup. I have never tasted ketchup that I was certain was bad, that had gone bad.
Oh, like this expired?
One. Oh, yeah. It was so, like, spicy, carbonated.
Oh.
Yes.
Wait, you sure it wasn't Del Monte? Or, like, Hunt's?
Because
that's just bad ketchup.
Yeah, no. It didn't taste like... You know how it's weird how Heinz has it just, like, dialed in and no one else can get it? Like, no one else has figured out the ketchup, how to crack the ketchup code. It wasn't like that. Like, because I get what you're saying. A Del Monte or a Hunt's is just like something is missing.
Yeah, it is just not right ketchup. And you know what? Even that fancy ketchup that Sir Kingsington they try to palm off on you.
Get out of here.
There's no such thing
as fancy ketchup.
Yes, thank you. Monocle aside and top hat aside, your ketchup is just acid. I don't know what you're doing with it. So, yeah, Heinz. They went through 56 other versions of ketchup, but that 57th one, they figured it out.
Yeah, they've got it dialed in. Whatever they're putting in there, I don't care, I don't want to know, but they've got it dialed in. This tasted like Heinz, but like Heinz that was expiration date 87.
Ooh.
And the label on it tells you, was it 1987 or could it be 1887? I'm not sure.
Heinz curative tomato tonic. Yes.
Right. It'll kiss what ails ya. It's spicy and carbonated. The bubbles make you know it's ketchup.
Revitalize your kidneys.
Put some Pepio Step and some hair on your head with Heinz fizzy ketchup.
And after you have your Heinz fizzy ketchup, wear your Heinz underpants.
What?
Ones that are strategically red for your... Self, yes.
Right, that's right. Part of the Heinz curative process is you have to pass the Heinz. And the thing about unintentionally spicy fizzy ketchup is you'll never know when it's coming out the other end. Be prepared with Heinz underpants.
Well, there goes that sponsorship deal from Heinz, but that was worth
Heinz,
it.
Heinz, underpants. They'll never know you dropped a load of goo. See, I told you, weird energy. Weird energy on today's show.
Yeah, I'm for it. I'm for it.
Yeah, but let's take that weird energy and let's make it even weirder with everybody's segment. I keep calling it everybody's segment. It's the segment everybody tunes in for. It might be the people segment. This segment might be the rock of our show.
Finally, the people's segment has started.
The drink segment has come back. But
see, the rock just showed up. This show's got nothing but hits. Anyway,
goodbye. I don't know why he sounds like that. That's right. The segment that everyone tunes in for. It's what are you enjoying this evening? And is tradition, John, why don't you kick us off and tell us what you're doing?
Well, I'm still going through my imported beers. Oh, and this one is imported from Germany. It's
a good sign.
It's a Red Burger Pilsner.
Red Burger Pilsner. Yeah. Tell me about it, John.
Well, everything's in German except Bitte? The back description, which is weird. Mm. I'm gonna give it a try.
Giving that German beer a try. Will it be good or will it be skunky from sitting in the bottle for 10 years? And then he opened it up and there was sediment in the bottom, but there wasn't supposed to be sediment in the bottom.
Yes. Mm. Everything you just described there. No, it's pretty mellow. White taste. I wish I would have brought a cup. I'm just drinking out of the bottle. And the bottle has a nice amber color to it, so it's blocking it from just getting sunblasted, I guess.
Blasted by those UV rays.
Yeah, it doesn't really have much of a finish. It's pretty light. Honestly, not too bad. I probably would want to try this in a draft form just to kind of see how it pans out. It's not too bad. Not too bitter.
Heck yeah.
Little bitter notes, but nothing too crazy.
A win for the International Beer Pack.
Yeah, I mean, 12 of them and like three have been good. I saw one of them and I'm like, really? This is the one that I'm gonna save? That's for next episode. That's when I'll drink it. You're gonna be like, that was in the International Beer Pack? I'm like, yeah, but I'm not gonna spoil it then.
Interesting. Okay.
But yeah, Radburger, that's what I'm having. But what's in your cup, vessel, vaso, glasso, and anything else?
Well, thanks for asking, John. We are back. It is the week days when we're recording this. So we're back on the light beer train. And so my beloved Modelo Oro is back in my fridge. Finally, the curse of whatever other light beer that I had to slum it with has been broken. And the Modelo Gold is back in the picture. Ah, and it didn't even spray everywhere. That's how good of a beer it is. But of course, we got to put a little lime in there. We're going to drink it from the can, but we're going to put a little lime in there because it is a Mexican beer, after all. And there's nothing quite as refreshing as a Mexican-style lager with lime. Oh, the lime squirted in my eye.
Oh, no. Look out.
My fortunes have turned.
Don't blink. It'll only hurt worse. I don't know that. I'm not a scientist. Maybe
yeah,
I am.
This beer is the only beer, the only light beer that I've tried where you don't feel like lesser for drinking it. Do you know what I mean? Like you don't feel like you're missing out on some sort of other experience. It's very similar to Modelo Especial. And so if you're a fan of Modelo Especial, then you will be a fan of Modelo Oro.
I gotta give that a try at some point.
I gotta
give it a try. You keep making it sound good. I might as well give that one. Once I go through the beers of the world, that is.
Yeah, set your expectations properly. It is a light beer. There's no getting away from that. But as far as, you know, that style of lager goes, 90 calories, only 3 carbs, and it has a decent flavor. You can't beat it. I can't recommend it highly enough. If you are in a situation where you gotta have light beer. If you're like me, where you could exercise and save up those calories and spend them on a delicious IPA. Just kidding, I hate IPAs, don't come at me. You don't. Modelo Oro, because you don't. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. We've got our beverages in hand now. Let's talk about a badass cartoon that's been on Disney Plus.
Like we said during our Shogun episode.
Wait, is this the whole song?
Is
this
the whole song? No, here.
I thought it was just the sting.
I got the sting. I got you.
Ears.
That's turned down so low, by the way, so I don't even want to hear it. If you all get your ears blown up, I'm sorry. I have that set to almost as low volume that it wouldn't play, but
And that's a little callback to our original X-Men the animated series episode. Go back and listen to that if you want the context around that thing where you're like, that doesn't sound like the theme at all. Doesn't it though?
Yeah, really think about it a lot. But yeah, like we talked about in our last week's episode, I've just had like X-Men 97 on the brain. So when we were trying to figure out like, you know, hey, what do you want to talk about now? Like, you know, should we cover this? Should we cover that? It was just like, no, let's just talk a little bit more X-Men 97.
Yeah. And when this episode comes out, it will be halfway through the season. The fifth episode will have premiered yesterday when you're listening to this, if you're listening to it on the day that it drops. And so we are in the halfway check-in point, although we haven't seen the fifth episode ourselves. We are not getting screeners yet, but hey, Mickey, if you're listening, we... Oh, he is! Hooray, a fan! We could really use those screeners, and guess what? We're only going to say nice things about it, so you don't have to worry.
Yeah, speak for yourself. I'm the heretic, and maybe I got some things to say about these last few episodes that'll probably blow people's minds.
Well, I was thinking about it, but now I decided not to.
Oh, no! Sorry, Mickey, I was kidding. I was trying to be the bad boy of the pod. It didn't work. No.
Well, anyway. You snooze, you lose, jerk. Okay, well, Mickey, understandable. Get wrecked. Okay, well, jeez. But yeah, I figure usually the format in which we do these whole season reviews is we'll check in on the first episode, do a little bit of a deeper dive, then we'll give you the whole impressions on all the series once it wraps up. But it felt right to check in on this halfway through because I have to agree with you, John. It's become an appointment television for me in a way that I did not anticipate.
Yeah, me too. Because it comes out the same day as Bad Batch. And the first week it was just like, what do you want to watch? Well, we'll watch Bad Batch first, then we'll watch X-Men. Last week it was, we're going to watch X-Men first, then we'll watch Bad Batch.
If we get to it.
Yeah, you know, maybe. If it's not today and it's tomorrow, it's okay. We're not going to get mad about it. Yeah, no, it is. It is truly appointment television. It is.
Maybe we need to do a series on Bad Batch so I can actually, like, muster the interest to actually continue watching it.
You know what? I think this season would interest you because do you care if I, it's sort of spoilery, but not like
keep it as light as you can, but you can give a little, just to whet my appetite. I'm checking with the spoiler rich. All right. It's like a thumbs in the middle. I don't know what exactly what that means.
Wait, is it that like Roman thumbs down where it's not really thumbs down? Like, am I getting gladiatored here?
I think, but it's like the deciding, you know what I mean?
Okay, well, this one deals with three themes from Heir to the Empire, the whole Thrawn series.
Okay, well you've piqued my interest. Good
that
sir.
Is that is about look, I know we're talking about X-Men, but Filoni here, all Bad Batch is setting up the, I feel anyway, the backbone to connect you all the way to Mandalorian and everything in between. It's like building the history for that. And probably even building the history for the Mandalorian and Grogu movie, and then his movie, the, you know, the big like culmination of all the shows,
the team
and
up
stuff.
Okay.
The team, yeah, up super thing. It's all building towards that, and that's what this is. But this deals with something very specific, and I'm only going to say it this way, and if you get it, great. If you don't, then we'll just have to wait and see. I'm just going to say it has, it doesn't have this person in it, but it's got these vibes. Luke.
Okay, I'm in. Oh no. Oh, geez. Did you see that they are releasing on May
Empire
the 4th?
4-pack, right?
Is no. That
what, oh no, no, what am I missing mean, then?
No, the new anthology series, Tales of the Empire.
Oh yeah, yeah. We just watched that trailer. That
looks cool. That being said, man, do they need to move forward or backwards or something? They are just wringing that original period, original trilogy time period out, just so there's no juice left.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm an apologist here or what it might be, but I actually think it's just, again, it all feels like it's in service to explain everything afterwards.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, so, we've said many times on this podcast, you're kind of a fool if you bet against Filoni, I think. This is a person who is a visionary and a worthy successor to George Lucas as a custodian of the franchise. That being said, like, I don't know. I will judge it, of course, as I do when I see it, but I just am not super interested in knowing more about the Inquisitors. I don't find them to be all that compelling. And while it's fun to see Vader again, it's just like, I don't know. He did a bad job on the Inquisitors. We're not seeing Vader's best work, I don't feel like.
Well, you think you'd want to hire your replacements? Please.
I guess
I would tank that too.
Yeah, I guess the way the Sith are set up, that you kind of don't want to have people around you who are ultra competent.
I get you. I get you. This is the one thing that I'd be like, this is all like more just, it's weird. It just feels like it's just trying to clear up any loose ends and establish just a baseline. I don't know. I could even admittedly say, like, Bad Batch is like a slow burn. Even the first season was like, oh, this is slower than Filoni naturally operates. The second season started the pickup, but like, I was still like, okay, what is this? And then finally, like towards the end of the second season, I was like, oh shit. Okay, I get this now. I know what he's doing. And then the third season, like, oh, okay, I get what he's doing. But if you're not like in the know or hip to like the Thrawn stuff, then like what he's showing here would just make you be like, oh, this is Mandalorian stuff instead. If you were even paying that close attention.
Fine.
I mean, I'm enjoying it. And also, whoever did like their third season animation, like they upped it. There are a couple like lighting scenes where they're just showing someone walk, where I was just like, oh, that just looks like a person. Like how well it's like animated and lit, everything is even better than I feel like the couple last seasons. Like I really feel like they upped their game there.
I think you're right about that. I think as far as like the aesthetics that they've worked out for their animated series have finally been perfected, I would say, or at least very close to it. Very cinematic, very beautiful, great to watch in general. But I want Filoni to explore those parts of the galaxies that we haven't touched and retread so many times. And hopefully the Rey Jedi Academy movie will finally move the clock forward and we can get some cool stuff based in the future with exciting new villains and time periods we don't know the conclusion of. That would be fun.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that that is a fair call out for sure.
Yeah. But we're not talking about that series, as you very deftly pointed out. No, we're here to talk about X-Men 97. Technically two episodes since we last spoke, but it's more like kind of three. It's like one full episode and two little episodes, which was a very welcome reminder of how they used to do cartoons like this. And I thought very weirdly prescient, because you were just talking about that other Saturday morning cartoon in one of our previous episodes that had this similar format.
Yeah, no, exactly. Just kind of like stories midstream that either, you know, will carry on and as a full episode, maybe down the line or something along, however they're doing it. It was a episode four was a nice break of the format, and also a really nice juxtaposition between the two stories.
Yeah, I think a good idea to have sort of a more playful, silly episode butted up against a very serious episode. But since we last spoke, the season one, episode three, Fire Made Flesh premiered, and then season one, episode four, Motendo/Life and Death. Life Death Part One. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about season one, episode three. This is basically the conclusion to the three part opener, I felt like.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Because it resolves the Jean Grey clone plot. Introduces in a big way Mr. Sinister on the scene, and sets up a future where for Cable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And shows, you know, of course, Storm losing her powers and leaving the team proper. We get introduced, so this is where we, in episode three, Fire Made Flesh, is where we really get the lowdown on Jean Grey's clone. I was surprised about how fast they sped through this arc. This is like based on a fairly important, fairly meaty arc from the comics, and the fact that they resolved it in one, like, a single episode was pretty shocking. I thought they would at least drag this out a little bit more, but I also like it for that. I think the storytelling was efficient and good in a way where I don't feel cheated necessarily. I guess I was just surprised that it's already dealt with, at least this part of it.
Oh, I prefer it. Like, this was an interesting, like, time in the comics. And again, you know, I've talked about how I'm not like the biggest X-Men fan in the world, but it'd be hard miss to know like some of the biggest story and plot lines, and this was you know, a big hullabaloo in the comics when it came out, with the introduction of like Madeline Pryor, and then trying to be like, hey, what's up with Jean, because she was dead at that point in the comics and all that stuff, and the introduction of Mr. Sinister. I didn't want to go through all that again. I was just like, oh, thank you, this is succinctly like 30 minutes and it was enjoyable, and I didn't really need all that preamble. But it also gives you a lot of places to go back to if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
Or it gives them that opportunity to go back. So, I was really kind of happy that this was just really clean. It was really clean. And always nice to have the introduction of the Goblin Queen, who I never thought I'd see in cartoon form, to be honest, just because of her outfit alone.
No, truly. And they do her outfit pretty well. This is a sexy cartoon. Let's not beat around the bush here. That seems crazy to say, but yeah, I mean, I was definitely, when I saw this, I was like, wait, what? Begging your pardon?
Begging your pardon now? What's going on?
It was a very salacious and titillating drawing of a woman.
Yeah, I mean, This is still a little bit more reserved than the original Goblin Queen outfit. Well, that one was like this is just kind of like the inverse of White Queen's outfit, which is totally fine, you know, in that sense. But again, I was just never expecting to see that on see this character, more or less this outfit in cartoon form. So I was shocked to catch it, and then doubly shocked to be like, wow, this was really like the fight scene animation in this episode and the magic conjuring. Holy mm-hmm. shit. It was like, I'm like, how did you do this? Is this 2D? Did you 3D over? Like, I'm so waiting for like the behind the scenes videos on how like they animated this stuff, because it was so clean.
Yeah, it truly. And I think the fight was incredible. I think that having all the X-Men show up was really cool, and having her totally dominate them with her like magical constructs and like sending them to, you know, dangerous mind obstacles, and then having the real Jean Grey come in and just really flex her muscles, I thought was really, really well done. Really, really impressive stuff. And just like you said, never thought I would see Jean Grey and the Goblin Queen fighting, doing psionic duels and like beating the crap out of having real step on me mommy energy with Scott.
Definitely.
Quite literally in this case.
Yeah, I did not have that in the cards. Not have that in the cards. But
never in a million years. But definitely handled by this group, and it just like makes me excited to see all the other comic storylines that they're going to tackle.
Exactly. It's coming at it with the same energy that the 92 series had, mm-hmm. but probably even more of a focused in making sure that they're getting the important beats of each of these storylines and making sure that they just hammer this home, with also not like really needing to explain stuff, because for them, they're like, just go back and watch some of the older episodes if you really want to know who like Mr. Sinister is or kind of this stuff. But this episode like leaves a lot of questions out there. And I think in the best way.
Yeah. And I think what is interesting is if you are not familiar with the history of X-Men and you're just, I don't know, for some reason, you're just kind of picking this up, which I could imagine, I could see people doing. I think it does a very good job of showing, not telling. Well, I mean, they do a fair amount of exposition, but in the case of Mr. Sinister, like they established that he's evil, he's powerful, and that he clones people fairly efficiently in a way that you understand his whole shtick to the extent that you need to for the episode in pretty short order.
Oh, exactly. That was the thing. It's like, oh, he's a cloner. He's been around for a minute. Seems like he's been involved with these people's lives. But it wasn't like they sat there and be like, oh, Mr. Sinister, you know him. Remember that time none of that preamble. It was just, oh, Mr. Sinister's here. But yeah, it was handled so deftly. And, honestly, I always thought Mr. Sinister was lame, but this one, I think, kind of made Mr. Sinister Mr. Sinister for me.
Well, you are a well-known, especially on this podcast, sort of fuddy-duddy when it comes to the X-Men.
Well, yeah, because why not?
Because why not? Yeah, great reasoning. Love it.
Thanks.
You're welcome. But yeah, I always loved Mr. Sinister. I always saw him as, you know, as his name might imply, a very sinister character. I like his face shape, who looks, it looks sort of like Gozer from the original Ghostbusters movie.
Yeah, a little bit. A little, yeah. Yeah.
With a flat top and like the you know, pasty white face. And then that red diamond that is repeated, that sort of splash of red that's repeated throughout his costume, always was a real big hit for me personally anyway. And I think they're doing a good job with him on the show as well.
I just always thought he looked like goth Colossus.
That sounds rad, dude.
I didn't even know that. Golothus.
Goth losses.
Goth losses, yeah.
Hello. Yeah,
I am in the deepest of despairs.
Will you go with me to the Vampire Weekend concert? No? Good, I didn't want you to come anyway.
I must go to it alone.
What? I must suffer in my own way.
I can say this because I was a goth in high school, so I feel like I could make fun of goths yeah, in this way. Yeah,
you're not making fun. I think you're just showing your goth flags.
Oh, whatever. You would not understand.
I wouldn't. I was the kid with the Xena T-shirts in high school. So.
Oh, that sounds cool as hell, though. Oh, got to go. I mean, I don't like pop culture.
All right, goth losses.
Okay, goth losses. Hey, another great character for the Pop Saga Pantheon. Who's ever doing our wiki, got to add a new page for goth losses.
My skin is made from impenetrable steel, but my heart is broken. Please let me join Midnight Suns. It goes with my new aesthetic so good. Goblin Queen, will you be my girlfriend? Oh, you're walking away already. I get it.
Well, I mean, that would be weird because it'd be like his grandkid.
Yep. I'm weird.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, yep, you know.
Fair enough, goth losses. At least you're being true to yourself, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then it wraps up the episode, I think, fairly nicely with the sort of send-off between, because they give Jean and Madeline a moment to connect and talk to each other and sort of, you know, be like, hey, this is weird, but I'm going to leave because it would be weirder if I stayed. I'm just going to figure out my own thing. And so it is weird, though, that then the next episode, no one's talking about it, because you would think the next 3 or 4 episodes are just like, so, that's weird.
We're going to talk about this, right?
Yeah, how long was it going on? You had a baby, you say.
Yeah, but how long have you been gone? You don't know.
Yeah, convenient.
Like, season 2? You've been gone since season 2? Or, like, season 4? Like, when were you gone? When did you come back? How did you find the house? Where were you? How did you escape? I got a lot of questions.
Many questions.
You better start answering them right now, because I'm getting worried.
She's just like, I can read minds and project myself across the globe. And you're like, oh, I saw a commercial with the X-Men on it, and the end. Oh, okay. I guess that works.
Yeah, okay. Way to spoil it. I was hoping there'd be some greater mystery. We got Bishop left. So hopefully Bishop comes back.
See you later, Bishop. You ruled in those first 2 episodes,
and he was cool. And this one, I loved when Cyclops like charged him up, and he was like,
"That was cool."
Boop, just shooting like this whole like weird hellscape. This is the hellscape apart with his energy. But Bishop's like, "I gotta go, but I'll take this baby with me. Don't worry, don't worry about this later." So
yep,
yeah, no, it was a great episode that sets up for. Hopefully something that'll pay off in the next couple episodes, at the very least.
Yeah, one would hope. And those episodes that were just champing at the bit to get. I want to just reiterate for the fans out there, we haven't seen the 5th episode, so if any of this stuff is in it, we don't know. It just hasn't come out yet. When we're recording this, of course. But then we jump to the next episode, and I saw a little bit. I had a little bit of this spoiled for me because they released a clip, a little bit of a clip, and it didn't ruin it for me, surprisingly. It instead got me even more excited to see the episode.
You want to say what the clip is? Or
The clip was just of the homage to the X-Men 4-player side-scrolling game that they have in the first part of episode 4, which is Motendo, where Intergalactic's TV producer Mojo, I guess, sends out these game consoles called Motendos, and then anyone foolish enough to assume they were given a gift that nobody told them about and then play it were then transported to Mojo World in order to take part in a brand new thing that will, you know, cause ratings. Because, like, according to Mojo, the old X-Men aren't doing it anymore. No, he needs something. He needs something that is, like, hot and that is appealing to the kids. And you know what that is? Video games.
That's it. He's only 20 years too late.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, no. I think I probably freaked Tanya out because I started cracking up when I saw the name of the episode. The minute I was like, oh, cool, we're getting Mojo.
Yeah, sweet. Mojo's going to be in this one. Mojo, in this one, who has been watching his figure a little bit? Mojo with the six-pack? Never knew that was a thing.
So I always thought, so this is what I picked up on it. Maybe I was completely off base here. What I picked up was, like, because his ratings were down, he wasn't eating so hot.
I see.
Like he was absorbing the people's sentiment, and that's what kind of kept him, like, you know, kind of fat catty. Versus this instance of him just looking like he got a bunch of gastric bypass or on Ozempic. I don't want to judge.
Yeah, it does look a little bit like Mojo on Ozempic. Although, when later in the episode, when Mojo becomes a boss of the video game that Jubilee is trapped in, he regains his girth.
Which I attributed to the fact that people were watching.
Okay, so it's, like, directly related. Is that part of the fiction that I don't remember?
To be honest, I don't know enough about Mojo themselves to try to figure out, like, what their powers are or what they can do. Like, it's always been like, oh, crazy space TV producer, you know, with a death TV shows, but the way he sounded, it sounded like he wasn't getting anybody. So I just like him, the blowing up and or getting big again and stuff like that was because people were watching, and that's kind of like was directly correlated. I could be completely off base there, but that's kind of what I picked up from it.
I don't know who they got to do the pixel art, like, video game tribute parts of this episode, but wow, kudos to whoever you are was in charge of that, because it was pitch perfect weaponized nostalgia. That was such an amazing arcade game. That 4-player X-Men cabinet game with, like, the two screens where there was, like, a crease in the middle and the graphics would get all warped when it went in.
You went in the middle. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that was for the longest time. My favorite version of that one is the, have you ever seen the 6-player version of that cabinet?
I haven't.
It is, I have to send you the picture. This is what I remember playing at, what is it called? A Game Center or something like that.
The Megacade in Santa Cruz?
No, there used to be an arcade spot, like, in between two different strip clubs here in the city, and it was a Game Center game. It was, like, in between 7th and 6th of Market, and it was just, like, the place to go. And they had discorded you the
the 6 cabinet players. That must have been incredible.
Like, I never had enough friends, unfortunately, to fill up all 6 spots, but, like, it was so cool. I think it's still probably one of the best X-Men games ever made. It was just so much fun and so vibrant, and this episode captured it, like, like you said, pitch perfectly. It was insane. Like, you could take those sprite models and those pixel models and stuff like that and just turn that into an actual game, and I'd play the hell out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I loved when Magneto shows up as a mid-boss, and he even has, like, the voice clip that sounds exactly like the original arcade. He's like, "I am the master of magnetism." It's like, oh, this is fantastic.
It's like, yeah, though, they definitely learned the nostalgia pool is truly real with this show, and I think in the best ways. And yeah, even the Sentinels being different colors to indicate that like this one was a tougher Sentinel. It's like, oh, it's the orange Sentinel. You know, it's gonna take, like, and you even see that played out where, like, Julie could destroy a basic one with, like, a hit, but, like, the orange one or whatever took, like, 3 hits. I just love that little attention to detail.
Yeah. Absolutely. It was like, God, it was such a pitch perfect recreation. I will say, though, that they're really dragging out Sunspot's, like, full power reveal.
Man, but you know he's going to do something real cool when it finally happens. You know that's going to be true. Like, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, this is the slowest burn has been seeing Sunspot just go ham as Sunspot. And
it's like, you could win this game. I know, like, it's good that it's Jubilee and her, I don't know, digital double, who is ends up being the one that guides them through the whole thing. But I kept being like, oh, come on, Robert, buddy, I know you don't want your parents to see you, like, transform into Sunspot, but you really should. You'd have this one on lock, I think.
Oh, no, that would be so... Yeah, I think you would have done great if you would have just charged up. Mm-hmm. For sure. It's funny that Digital Double comes back from, like... That's from the comics as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, Obsessa or something like that? I think? Yeah, I think that's that character's name. Let me go over it real quick. Yeah, I think that's how you call it. Abscissa? Yeah, A-B-S-C-I-S-S-A. But the cool thing is voiced by the original Jubilee voice actress.
Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah.
That was super cool. It was also cool to see just, like, a full realization of what Jubilee could, like, the potential Jubilee has with their powers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm a Jubilee fan. I've always have been. Well, you know, some people are always like, Jubilee's like Robin. I'm like, is there anything wrong with that?
Because Robin rules.
Yeah, Robin's great.
Is that bad?
Yeah, why are you making it seem like it's a bad thing? And they have a Jubilee-centric episode done so well that it was just like, oh, yeah, this. I didn't know I needed it, but now I got it, and I'm happy I got it.
Yeah, because the episode is centered around it being... Or at least this part of the episode is centered around it being Jubilee's 18th birthday, and sort of like all what she really wants to do is just hang out with Roberto, because you know they're crushing on each other. But they end up going on a wacky adventure in Mojo World, and it's just a delightful nostalgia filled romp that I enjoy the heck out of.
Yep. I don't really want to say much more. People should definitely watch this episode if you haven't. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. The second part of this episode, Life Death Part 1. So I guess that means certainly we'll be getting a Part 2 at somewhere. Maybe the next episode. It looks like, based on what I'm reading here on IMDb, it's actually 2 episodes away. But we are picking back up with a depowered Storm and Forge.
Yeah.
Forge, the mutant who can imagine anything and then build it as long as he's got the money to do so.
I think money and wherewithal.
Yeah.
I think. But I don't know about you, but Forge is also another one of my favorite type of X-Men, because it's such a that's like the type of power I want. That's wacky as shit. Like, if I'm sitting here going like, man, I really wish I had something that would just, you know, like a machine that would just make Coca-Cola for me. That way I don't need to go out and buy it anymore.
Uh-huh.
Forge could do it.
Yeah. He could do it. I think that's true. I also think that it is, like you're saying, it is one of those, it's one of those things that is what makes the X-Men special. Because I don't think I've ever heard of a superhero that has quite this power, but it is wildly interesting. The power is so, like, you just have the most, like, analytical creativity where you can dream of anything and make it work as long as you have the desire and the resources to put it together. That's a cool as hell mutant power that doesn't really have a flashy effect, but it is just emblematic of why how broad and interesting you can get in an X-Men story. And it's one of the reasons why Forge is, like, I think emblematic for me of one of the reasons why I love the X-Men and I love them as just a platform for storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great departure from this person flies, this one's super strong, this one shoots light. It's just like, it's this really weird power that lets you do other things with it, which I really felt like up until this point we were getting really like one-dimensional X-Men characters. I think that was always that's always been my problem with X-Men, is like they are such a team-based group that, like, I feel like a lot of their powers are handicapped because of it.
Yeah, I think though that Forge and Bishop are kind of cut from the same cloth in that Bishop also has a super interesting power. Like, he can project energy, but he has to absorb it first. That's cool as hell. I mean, it's kind of like, I guess, Black Panther's suit a little bit, but still.
Or, like, I without the energy projection, I think of it like his powers are kind of like Sebastian Shaw, the Black Kings.
Mm-hmm. Sure, right? That's a good point.
He gets punched, he gets super strong, right? Like, he's just converting the energy into, like, strength. I just feel like Bishop is just a conduit. You shoot him, he's able to absorb it to a degree and shoot it back. So a little different. Like, Forge is just kind of like, he's kind of your MacGuffin. He's whatever you need Forge to do that issue.
Mm-hmm. Because kind of like Cypher, right?
I mean, a little bit. It's just like, hey, we need this. Okay, let me think about it for a little bit. And he just kind of makes it. You just go... And he can invent things that just never existed, as you know, and that is just a wild conceit that goes kind of beyond science, I think, at a certain point, that he's capable of making things, you know, happen. And it's just a wild one. And like these covers, especially the Life Death, I remember the first one and the second one, beautifully painted by Barry Windsor Smith. Like, I was so happy to see they were doing this storyline, because I remember those issues. Just those covers are just so striking that I'm like, ooh, good. This, because it's kind of a messed up episode issue as well, because that weird juxtaposition and kind of dealing with Forge's guilt in this instance.
Yeah, it is a episode about Forge trying to give Storm back her powers. And it's a little bit of an episode that involves them falling in love a little bit. But we find out, and this would be a surprise to anyone who has not read the comics, but that Forge is actually indirectly responsible for Storm losing her powers in the first place. And so part of this is, not only does he want to get her powers back for her, but it's also to assuage him of the guilt of her losing them in the first place.
Yeah, real, real powerful stuff. Mm-hmm. Real powerful stuff. And that's why I'm happy this was split, because I don't think you could do Life Death as a, I don't think you could do at least part one as a singular episode. I really feel like this was a concentrated version of it. Cause it's only like a couple, issues. It's not even like that long, but it is just a moment of time. So they have that. And then, you know, it sounds like you said, it seems like it's coming up. We're going to get part two in a couple more episodes, which will be great because then that way we can really expand upon it. But like, I mean, this is my favorite version of Storm with the Mohawk.
The Mohawk version. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Like when she was powerless and just showed how much of a badass she was by, like, you know, fighting like the Morlocks and like becoming like their leader to beating Cyclops with no powers and like running the X-Men from that. Like this is like peak Storm for me. Mm-hmm. And finally having like writers and animation and everything that kind of can back this up. I'm so engrossed with it. And you know, this is a little weird too, in terms of like learning a little bit more about Forge's backstory and stuff. They remove some of the comic book things, like Forge has a metal, you know, a cybernetic leg and cybernetic hand. And I think originally in the comics, he lost it in Vietnam, but Vietnam's no longer a concept that a lot of kids know anymore. So they just go, he lost it in a war.
Yep, he just says the war, and we are left to fill in the blanks of what war that could be referring to.
Exactly, but it I mean, I don't know. This was a great one as well.
Yeah, truly. She like there is a moment where you think that she has gotten her power back, but that's really right towards the end, and the end is like it goes from kind of like a mournful, regretful romance and like a definitely a little bit of a situation where you feel Storm's hurt for being like deceived by Forge, and into like the metaphysical and bizarre. It really switches gears at the end where you are like, where am I and what is happening?
Yeah, that's true. I still don't know what that giant owl thing is. That's not ringing a bell for me.
I didn't recognize it either, but I think it's supposed to be a dire wraith, maybe.
I mean, it's enough. This show is enough that it's making me even think about picking up the older runs that like I've either read or read like a single issue here and then never continued. And instead of just pick it up to just kind of see if that thing is in there. Cause I'm like, what the fuck is this thing? I don't want that in my house or in my life.
Yeah. It's pretty scary.
Yeah. A little poopsie. Make you poop a little bit. Like that would, no, there's a, cause there's like a
you call it?
Poopsie.
Little poopsie. So is that when you get scared?
You get a little poopsie. Yeah. A little poopsie.
Okay. Well, love it. Love it, can't get enough of it, and yet here we are. I believe it is their version of the Dire Wraith, though. I don't remember it looking quite as much like a bird in the comics. It's more like a monster with like a floppy coat on in the comics, if I remember correctly. But I can't imagine, because they are in the life-death arc, and I can't imagine what else this would be if it's not that. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to send you a little bit of a something. You can take a look. You can tell me what you think. An interesting take on it, certainly. And if this is that indeed is what it is, and just a wild twist to an episode, and the fact that it seems like they're going to make us wait a whole another episode before we find out. I mean, we know that I keep saying Rogue. Storm is going to be fine, but still, this is a bit of a tease.
Oh, for sure! Like this is the moose boosh, and we need more than that. Just give me the whole thing. This is like the one show where I'm like, hey, you know, it'd be pretty cool. I don't know. Just give me all of them. I don't want to wait. I don't want to wait. But I think you're right in terms of the dire rates, by the way. I always just seem to remember them in the comics just being like black and white, like jaggedy shaped, like humanoid-y or like maybe bipedal shaped, like something from an episode of Freakazoid. Like,
yeah, sure. There you go.
Like a little thing. This one, the one that you sent, looks a little cleaner. Looks a little cleaner, but
yeah. It looks like a monster in a baggy coat with little worms hanging out of its silly little mouth. But yeah, that's where we're at the time of this episode's recording. Of course, I won't spoil anything, but next episode, season one, episode 5, is called Remember It.
All right, I'll try.
Yeah, I assume that is not in reference to the Stephen King character Pennywise the Clown and the titular movie thereof. I'm assuming that that's not what they're referring to. It's not just a bunch of people walking around being like, have you seen Tim Curry in It? Remember It?
That would crack me up.
That would, yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll have to check that out when it comes around. But John, how are you feeling about this? We're about halfway through the season. It sounds like series is receiving a glowing review from you. How are you feeling about it?
Oh, I'm absolutely loving it. I did not think I'd ever be so engrossed with an X-Men cartoon.
And here you are.
And here I am, just like knee deep in it, want more of it. This is prime X-Men, bar none. Beautifully animated, beautifully written, really, really, really cool. Yeah, they got me. Like, for sure, they could have a couple of snoozers, and I'd be like, I'm okay with it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, they could drop the ball a couple times. I don't care. I'm still along for the ride. And we got a whole 10 episodes of this first season. They already have the second season, I guess, in the can, or at least it's close to being done with the production, and they just greenlit a third. I'm here for it. Bring it on.
Yeah, no, definitely. Get me that as soon as possible. I hope we don't find out anything weird about the original showrunner.
We'll have to wait and see with how that all plays out.
Yeah, we do, but I'm really enjoying it, and I'm thankful to have it. I didn't think that we'd have not three excellent cartoons this year so far, but with Revolution, and then, you know, I'm really enjoying Bad Batch, and then X-Men 97 really clocked me out of left field. So congratulations. You got a fan in me. Enough so where I want to buy the toys.
That's what you insane. Know.
Yeah, that's what I know.
Yep, that's they've got their hooks in you. Well, there you go. We'll be back when the show is over. Unless we can't help ourselves. We might be back sooner than that. But we'll for sure be back after the finale to wrap up the entire season and tell you what we thought of the whole run. Will it continue with this quality? Will it fall off? We don't know. We can't wait to find out, though. But that's going to do it for us for this week. I hope you enjoyed this episode. We sure as heck enjoyed making it for you. So without further ado, let's roll into the outro. First up, I'd love to thank Burton M6 for all the incredible music on our show. Check our show notes for a link to his Fiverr page. And, you know, what they say, the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. And doesn't this intro song taste great? I feel like I made that work. Anyway, yeah, check them out if you want. There are other links to all of our socials, but the most important one in the show notes is, of course, the link to our Discord. Come join all the Pop Saga pals, and you can tell us about how quote-unquote funny you found our hilarious April Fool's joke episode. Gotcha! Join the fun. You could witness Tanya giving us a thumbs up, the rare prize for all of our hard work that we both very much appreciate. But as we like to say at the end of every episode, wherever you are out there, however you choose to listen to us, we hope that you're feeling happy and healthy. And if you're not, that's okay too. But without further ado, I'm going to throw it over to John for the final word.
Remember, folks, when life's got you a little spoopy, break out your Heinz revitalizing underwear.
Hey, thank you for tuning in to all my super fans. Hope you coming back again. Got a shout out to Fresca. I know you riding with me as we pull up in the Hyundai Daily City. You want the hype? I gotcha. Gotta keep it locked right here on Pop Saga. Woo! Pop Saga, let's go.